Welcome everyone to the Reimagine Mobility podcast series. I'm here with Frank Apkinar, former director of powertrain engineering at Ford Motor Company. Frank, thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking the time today. You have a tremendous amount of experience and history in the traditional ICE space. And yes, ICE is still not dead and will not be for many years to come. So great to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about your background, and then let's jump in and specifically focus on ICEs besides all the other topics we cover on this podcast.
Hi, Stefan. Thanks for inviting me. It is good to see you again after a while. As you said, I retired from Ford the end of last year. My last assignment was Global Director of ICE powertrain. And I spent 32 years at Ford, tremendous opportunities from launching products to working in strategy and also stint in manufacturing. So try to see kind of a little bit of everything to get grounded. Also had some opportunity to develop some new teams in multiple global locations. I spent some time in UK. We were launching some of our global engines when I was there in basically Brazil and India, where we were trying to get some new products out. And then also spent 4 years in China as global, as the director for Asia Pacific powertrain, where we were trying to develop a team there from almost from scratch. So tremendous people that I worked with and great memories.
It sounds like, and certainly a blessing to be in all these different positions and all in different regions of the world. I'm sure it was a tremendous experience. So let's, right away, when you said you worked in strategy, you worked in engineering, and you worked in manufacturing, a question to me pops up that means is, Frank, from your perspective, from your opinion, looking back now, what is the most important out of those three functions when it comes to ICE powertrain? Is it a strategy to figure out what to do? Clearly important, but is it more important than how you then engineer the product? And is that more important than how you ultimately manufacture it and how you ultimately then make money for Ford Motor Company?
That's really a good question. I started my career in product development, and especially when you're, you know, back then, not anymore, but back then, if you were engine, you kind of felt like everybody really worked for you. and you think you're designing everything, and they need to just make it, forget. Then I spent 6 years in manufacturing, and it was one of the highlights of my career, first of all. But the interesting part was every sensitive operation in my, I worked in a couple of engine plants. I was in charge of production. Every sensitive operation, when I looked closely, it didn't have the most robust design to begin with. So that was one. And the other part is when you're sitting in a strategy role and then product development, the two groups really set the tone for the rest of the, you know, enterprise. And one of those things that sometimes you don't, you know, keep a close eye on is complexity of design, but complexity of variance. And when I went to the strategy team, that was one of the things that was clear in my mind, that I cannot add to complexity. I have to simplify as much as I can. So some of the latest products that we launched just before I left, the couple of engines, if you go and look under the hood of any vehicle at Ford that we are launching with the 1.5 or a 2-liter engine, you're going to see a system that is clean, lacks clutter, and much simpler just to look at. And in my opinion, that that cleanliness, that clean design, efficient design, it gives you better quality and also gives you better cost. But it's funny because I didn't start in manufacturing. Instead, I started in product, and manufacturing taught me a lesson and helped me kind of think about it when I went to strategy.
Interesting. So, Frank, would you then almost say that it would be the best if you were to start your career again? You would say, you know what, I want to start in manufacturing, then go to strategy and then engineering? Or how would you do it, Dan?
Having exposure to manufacturing is really good because you have to you're basically dealing with the end game at that, right? So you see, you end up seeing the flaws, which sometimes are invisible when you're doing a strategy or we're doing a, you know, a design, right? And I would say that. And then I would probably say you want to also understand the product before you go to the strategy. Otherwise, if you don't understand the product and the manufacturing, and you go to a strategy, you think about your end product as a paper, not as a product. And you need to think about your end game as a product.
True. True. Yeah, very good. I mean, I've been in situations myself, right, where you dealing with manufacturing, where you look at this thing and say, who the heck designed this thing? They never thought about the dang manufacturing. You know, it sounded like a great idea when you designed it, but it was, again, that's why we call it design for manufacturing, right? That little step there that's sometimes so important.
Stefan, if I may, I want to add one more thing, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the other thing that I think that helps if you're working in whether manufacturing or whether working in product, have experience in different parts. I worked a lot on engines and the rest of the powertrain, but one of my assignments when I came back from China was in the installation of the powertrain into the vehicle. But that usually comes a little later, right, in the process. And I saw opportunities there that the people who started this engines, if it was a clean sheet, they never thought about the next group that had to put it together into the vehicle. And one of the things that I'm really proud of in 2019, when we did the last couple of engines that I did, I put the installation team right from day one with my engine team to work it together. Exactly. And then in 2019, we actually kicked off a study using the MIT's systems engineering to look at the entire powertrain. And the assignment I gave the three people that I put in that course was, if you wanted to start a new powertrain organization, how would you do it from a clean sheet? And we ended up completely changing our organization in 2020 by including bringing all the installation and even thermal system into the engine group. So you develop the whole thing together.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. Very good point. Let's jump into and talk a little bit about, let's say, alternative fuels. Okay, everybody is on the path to green energy, green propulsion, green mobility, sustainable mobility. All great. I think sometimes we forget that we can also run an engine either very clean or truly clean, right? And I think, again, synthetic fuels, alternate fuels, whatever the name we want to call them is. What is your perspective on that, Frank? Because you must have worked on these types of things or at least analyzed these things on a maybe not just European basis or China basis or US basis, also on a global basis. Give me your perspective now looking back to what you saw then and what you see now. And frankly, again, as we talk here about reimagining mobility, what could you see in the future, what you have when you left and what the state then was?
As engineers, we need to sometimes step back and look at it from the human aspect, not from a technology aspect. The ultimate goal is improving the climate. And to do that, our role as people in transportation is decarbonizing. That's the goal, okay? Now, there is no question that electrification is absolutely the right solution, especially for the light-duty vehicles. But let's just start looking at some figures, right? The rate of turnover to new vehicles is about 4 to 5% in developed countries, right? Today, we in North America or in US, our average age of vehicle is about 12 years. So you can go do the math and figure out how many years it's going to take to turn over this whole thing. And then you got the rest of the world is, you know, developed world is similar, and developing world is even worse shape than that. So we are going to have over 1 billion vehicles that are going to be with ICE on the road. So if you step back and the goal is decarbonization, you cannot just count on one solution. You address this too. You address the car park. Okay? And that is where alternative fuels and different solutions are important, because you are not going to convince people to come and spend $5,000-$6,000 on an older vehicle to change it to an electrified or reconfigured. It has to be a drop-in solution. Okay? And I think that is where the e-fuels or synthetic fuel can play a very important role. It's interesting that we're having this conversation. Yeah, I saw a clip just this morning that Stellantis just completed all their work on 24 engines. And now I think what it says that they're having a they are declaring that they have a drop-in solution for those, right? Yeah. So the point is, yes, we need new vehicles, come up with newer technologies, but we have to address the car park as well if we really want to decarbonize transportation. And now, the question is, it's got to be drop-in. Obviously, it's got to be cost-effective. It's got to be transportable. But it also has to be, you also have to be able to produce it with green energy or...
when I ask that question, exactly. What about the infrastructure, so to speak? Right?
Exactly. Yep. So you need a fuel that is liquid, that's transportable, that they can put it in the gas stations today. But the beauty of e-fuels or alternative fuels or synthetic fuel is that you can produce it in areas which you have abundant sources of renewable energy, sun, solar or wind or whatever, and then transport to the areas that probably do not have that opportunity. Right now, that is the critical path to develop. And, you know, I'm sure you're aware, Stefan, Porsche is doing some investment in that space, and others are doing this. Stellantis' announcement was very interesting. So the point is, we have to think about the total system, not just what the 4 or 5% turnover that every year you produce on new vehicles. And that's where I see the alternative fuel to play the biggest role.
All right. What is your belief? And let's just be frank, I believe Ford is one of the very few that still globally talks about the importance of hybrids, right? We have Toyota that talks quite strongly about that too. And I see they have a very strong, in my opinion, a very strong point. And I think so do you. What is your opinion of hybrids and addressing exactly what we just talked about here, right? Decarbonization, generally speaking.
I mean, hybrids are going to have a place. I mean, there is no doubt about it. They probably be a transition for a very long time till the infrastructure in place and, you know, all the other challenges that we have to do. But you can't wait for all the other infrastructure issues, everything be resolved, and then turn a switch and go into all EVs. You have to have all these tools in your toolbox to address the climate. I was listening to a speak. You might have been also part of that. I think somebody from Toyota was saying that for every battery that you can produce for an EV, you can produce 8 batteries for a PHEV, right?
Yep. You and I were in the same room then, yeah. That's right.
Right. Just think about what kind of impact you can have if you can have that kind of a volume out there. The other thing that, a lot, we are still not taking good advantage. Toyota is doing a very good job at that. Is with a good hybrid system, you can really simplify the engine itself and be able to offset some of the cost that comes with the extra widgets that you have to put for a hybrid, right? So I think I am a total believer that that plays a role. It may be a role that is out there for like 5-10 years, but without it, you know, this is going to be a longer road to fix, to go 100% EV.
Talk a little bit timelines. Again, you talk how long, if you've mentioned this a little bit. Let's talk about timelines. Let's make it simple. I'm not going to ask you when is the IC really not going to be around anymore, because we're talking applications and heavy duty outside of passenger, off-road, mining, agricultural, military, lots and lots. So let's forget that for a moment. Let's focus on passenger vehicle, right? What is Frank's view when ICE will be maybe at a, from a production level, not from a in the world being used or in the US or whatever, as you mentioned before, a billion cars, it's going to take a long time till that is all gone, right? But let's talk about the major OEMs producing ICE vehicles. How much longer do you see that happening?
Well, I'm looking at the same data that you see, to be honest. So the same projections. And last year in 22, we had the North America reach 6%. I saw some news that 25 or 26, more than 25 countries now have reached a pretty significant threshold on the BEV. So definitely it's accelerating. If all the projections are correct, we're going to go to a point maybe to about, some countries like, in Europe are going to go faster. China's going to go faster. North America is going to be, all the projections are going to be somewhere between 45 and 50% by 2030. Let's take that on. The rest of it is going to have a few factors. The cost of ICE is going to go up with the regulation, because you have to add more technology for emissions, for CO2. That's a fact. Well, like every new technology, the cost of EVs are going to come down. So whenever you get to that 50% range, I think that might be the point that maybe you get acceleration towards 70 or 80. But you also have to consider the social factor. I mean, we live in a country that, for a number of reasons, and it's not just our country. Yep. I mean, other places in the world, polarization is becoming pretty big factor. Right now, there is a sentiment out there among some part of the population that EVs is government pushing a directive down their throat. You have to overcome that. And the way to overcome that is to make sure that they look at it as the right thing to do and a financially smart thing to do. Okay? I was reading a book. It wasn't about cars. It was about the situation in Louisiana. And it's a society that's very much, believes in individualism, lack of government. And one of the people was suggesting, it was a quote in the book, is if you want to sell solar panels in Louisiana, don't tell them it's for climate, tell them it's for cost. You don't have to pay for electricity. So I think we need to package this thing, not just purely with incentives of government. It has to have other elements to it to sell it.
Yeah. It becomes a marketing challenge again, right?
How you pitch it.
And I think, again, as you said before, we oftentimes look at a solution, EVs, and say, this is it, the solution, but we forget to look at the system, the same as you looked at the beginning when it comes to an engine, right? Look at a system as a whole, the whole ecosystem, and not just one or two pieces of it. So it's very good. So maybe then the last questions for you, Frank. What do you see when I ask yourself to reimagine mobility? And again, we can deviate from ICE, we can deviate from e-fuels, whatever, just open to you. But maybe let's focus on the propulsion aspect of any type of vehicle, and on the ground, in the air. Let's leave on the ground and in the air, watercrafts as well. What do you see when you ask yourself, how do I, Frank, reimagine mobility? What's the thoughts that come to mind?
I think Electrification has so much momentum that it's going to be primary. Okay? There's going to be, like the other areas that you mentioned, heavy duty, then they will start thinking about that they have to get in the game of cleaning the environment too. Okay? And they will need different solutions that is more appropriate for their, you know, system, their operating costs, their, you know, range that they need, their, all the, you know, challenges that we are all talking about. And I think we are going to see a multi, you know, and several different solutions in different areas that is going to actually be really good for environment, is going to help us achieve our goals of cleaner air, okay? But it is not a cookie-cutter approach. We have to look at the consumer, how they use the application, and as engineers, we have to come up with solutions that meets those requirements. That, and that really, that's what engineers do.
Yep.
Engineers come with solutions.
I got one final, actually. I was lying before. It wasn't the final question. One more question. What's going to be the next car you're buying, Frank?
Next car that I'm buying? Well, it's got to be a Ford or a Lincoln.
It's got to be Ford. Come on. When well, the question is it an electric? Is it a hybrid? Or you're sticking with one of those engines that you helped develop and make so good?
I think I just picked up a vehicle with one of the last engine that, you know, I helped develop. And I love it. I definitely would look at a hybrid solution for sure. And when I get comfortable with with some of the range anxiety and stuff, I have no issues moving to a BEV application. Okay, so like I said, we gotta clean up the system, the transportation system. That's our goal. Really, I honestly, Stefan, I haven't given up myself because I just picked up the last.
That's all good. That's perfect. Thank you so much, Frank. Always great talking to you and great insight. And again, the value of that you brought here and that our viewers will definitely see with your history and experience. Again, manufacturing, engineering, and strategy going from the end to the beginning sort of thing, invaluable. And hopefully a lot of young engineers and aspiring engineers listening here take a note of that and realize the importance of experience and experience in different fields. I think that's very critical. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity. I hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks for listening to Reimagine Mobility Podcast. If you liked this episode, please subscribe and tell a friend.